situation will encourage them insert that brought these calamities upon Israel and pave the way for further disasters. Emphasis supplied at a symposium of the National Unity Government held at Hebrew University of Jerusalem in May 1985. Professor Shlomo Avinery noted that Begin had become hated throughout the world, despite his having received the Nobel Peace Prize, implying that Israel's status throughout the world has declined because of foreign reaction to the arrogance and insufferability, aside from earning the hatred of much of the world and grossly mismanaging the affairs of Israel. What has Menachem Begin accomplished in Teddy Pruce's book, Begin, His Regime? He compares Begin with Ben-Gurion, stood with his face to the future, looked ahead and was ready to pay with earnings from the past. Begin behaved quite the opposite. He stood with his face towards the past, looked backward, and was ready to. Ben-Gurion's apocalyptic prophecy, found in a letter he wrote to Moshe Sherrett on May 31, 1963, resounds today like a heavenly voice from beyond the mountains of darkness. I have no doubt that Begin's rule, Mapei, is bringing his rule of Israel closer, will lead to the destruction of the state. In any case, his rule will turn Israel into a monster. After 6.25 years of his rule, Ben-Gurion's warning is not far from realization. The peace treaty with Egypt, his one and great accomplishment, was emptied by Begin of all content and squandered through settlement activities and the Lebanon War. With the erasure of this accomplishment from the balance sheet, Prime Minister Begin's resignation remains a soul service that he performed, as discussed in Chapter 3 of this book. Begin's successor, Yitzhak Shamir, has even less credentials, except that he had a bloodier terrorist career than Begin. How much confidence can be placed in the leadership of such a man? As discussed in the chapter on Zionism, Shamir succeeded Stern as the head of the Stern Gang, or Lehi. In Israel's historical self-reckoning, there is nothing bleaker than Lehi's attempts to establish relations with the Nazis. At the end of 1941, 7 years after Hitler had come to power, and more than 2 years after the outbreak of the Second World War, when the anti-Semitic atrocities of the Nazis were well known, Lehi sought an alliance with Nazi Germany. The memorandum transmitted from Lehi to the Germans asserted that, according to its worldview and structure, Lehi is very close to the totalitarian movements of Europe. Not only did it claim to share with Germany common interests for a new order in Europe and the authentic aspirations of the Jewish people, but it also claimed to be close. This attempt to make a deal with the Nazis was no isolated incident. It continued a political line that began with attempts to make contacts with the Italian fascist government. Words of praise to Hitler appeared in the revisionist press, provoking a sharp rebuke from Jabotinsky himself. The Germans' response was negative, but Lehi was not deterred. A few months later, it sent Nathaniel and Moore to the Balkans to arrange a meeting with the Germans and persuade them of the benefit to them of an alliance with the Jews against Britain. When this affair became known, after the German diplomat von Hantig published his memoirs in 1974, Eldad and Yellen Moore had to defend their actions. Eldad described them as a far-sighted scheme to rescue the Jews of Europe, since at the time the final solution had yet to be adopted. Yellen Moore reported that Abraham Stern, the leader of Lehi, had anticipated a German defeat and feared that Britain would dominate the entire Middle East. Did Stern and his colleagues truly believe that assistance from Lehi could tip the scales in favor of Germany, and that it was better for the Jews that Germany win the war? It is doubtful whether the long history of the Jews, full as it is of oddities and cruel ironies, has ever known such an attempt to make a deal with rabid enemies, of course, ostensibly for reasons of higher political wisdom. But how could cooperation with the Nazis have furthered the establishment of the Kingdom of Israel? What could have induced the Nazis to cooperate with the Jews and so radically change their entire ideology to the point of intimate partnership with them? Perhaps, for peace of mind, we ought to see this affair as an aberrant episode in Jewish history. Nevertheless, it should alert us to how far extremists may go in a time of distress, and where their manias may lead. Emphasis supplied, Huckabee's admonition that we should be alert to how far extremists may go, and where their manias may lead, must be taken seriously. To be alert is to recognize that the manias of the extremists are leading Israel, which is leading the Israeli lobby, which is leading the government of the United States, which will lead, if not stopped, to a war of unthinkable consequences. The possibility that Ariel Sharon may realize his ambition to succeed Shamir is too appalling to contemplate. The reckless and irrational policies of the Likud are alienating the nations of the world and destroying any chance for peace. Moreover, the alliance between the Likud and the religious extremists, with their religious and ethnic hatreds, threatens to undermine a century of amity and friendship with the Gentile population of the West. From this, the Jews of the diaspora cannot afford to remain aloof. Huckabee writes, "For many Jews, Israel has become the prime focus and symbol of Jewish identity. Jews, especially in the United States, are disposed to liberalism. When liberal public opinion is critical of Israel, they experience a cognitive dissonance, and this gnaws at their Jewish identity. The future of the reputation of the Jewish people throughout the world now depends on Israel's good name and international stature. More than any other state, Israel is a hostage to world public opinion. Israelis must remember this. We Israelis must be careful, lest we become not a source of pride for Jews, but a distressing burden. Moreover, Israel is the criterion according to which all Jews will tend to be judged. Israel as a Jewish state is an example of the Jewish character, which finds free and concentrated expression within it." Emphasis supplied: if Israel today is the example of the Jewish character which finds free and concentrated expression in it, the religious extremists and fanatics are making a mockery of world Jewry. Huckabee asks why the Jews allow the religious extremists in Israel to spread religious and racial hatred without protest. Religious Jews seem unaware how much explosive material is latent in the assertion that halakha takes precedence over the law of the land. If, as Mikahane and many others assert, Jews have the right to expel Arabs and aliens from the land of Israel, why do the nations of the world have to allow Jews to live in their countries? The same reasoning applied to Rabbi Yosef's ruling that the New Testament should be burned, and the unfortunate case of the actual burning of a copy thereof. It provides retroactive legitimacy to the burning of Jewish holy books by Christians. The most revolting manifestations of this trend, even if it involves only a tiny minority in Israel, is the revival of the command to blot out the memory of Amalek and the identification of Amalek with the Arabs. How can a rabbi's assertion that the killing of a non-Jew is not murder be justified? Christians might say that killing Jews isn't murder, thereby providing sanction for all the pogroms of history. How can Jews hold up their heads when they hear such claims and not actively combat them? Emphasis supplied: more important, how can the Anti-Defamation League sit idly by and allow this defamatory and calumnious attack on Jewish principles and ethics? This is real anti-Semitism. Is Zionism racism? As indicated in the previous chapter, revisionist Zionism, championed by Menachem Begin and Yitzhak Shamir, and the central philosophy of the Likud party, is not reticent on the subject of the superiority of the Jewish race as compared with the rest of mankind. Huckabee describes the ideology of the Likud. It attributes supreme value to the concept of nation or race. Its natural extension is the idea that the whole world is against us. In its most extreme form, it presents non-segregation and openness toward strangers as treason against Judaism. This view of a unique essence also breeds the belief that the Jews are allowed what is forbidden to others. On a political level, the idea that the greatness of the Jews stems from their essence is translated into self-righteousness. Israel is not responsible for untoward development in the Arab-Israeli conflict, and indeed cannot be. It is no accident that Begin promoted this attitude and found immediate support for it, and himself, among religious circles. Huckabee continues with a summary of the religious extremists' concept of the chosen people. The Jews as the chosen people are superior in their essence to all other human beings. Their divine election is a fact, an absolute fact. The difference between Jews and non-Jews is thus part of the very nature of things. God, separated between the profane and the holy, between the light and the darkness, between Israel and the nations, the sages have provided us with passages and His Spirit too. Israel is dear, having been called sons of the Holy One. Anyone who preserves a single life of Israel is considered to have preserved